This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Wait, I want to ask the question again. Okay. So like he cuts me out.
Yeah. She didn't ask us yet. Slow your roll.
Ciao a tutti. Welcome to season 3 of She Builds podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time. This season, we will be discussing ladies who influence the built environment in professions outside of architecture. I'm really excited to branch out of our architecture comfort zone and learn about these professions and different perspectives. What about you, ladies?
Heck yeah, I'm so excited. Season 3, let's do this. I feel like this season will be somewhat non-traditional for us, but I like it.
Yeah. Agreed. I'm very excited to see how it's going to play out.
So before we start, one more thing. We can't continue without saying thank you for supporting us. We wouldn't have made it this far without all of your support.
Thank you, listeners.
Yay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, we will be discussing Florence Nightingale, a pioneer of healthcare architecture design. I'm Nurjeri Rivas, missing my family and Puerto Rico in Houston, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jessica Rogers, missing the Miami sunshine and family, based out of rainy Washington, D.C.
Hi there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, missing family and friends in Michigan from San Francisco.
Quick disclaimer, the three of us are not historians, nor are we experts on this subject. We are just sharing stories about the information we find. So if we get our facts a little mixed up, please forgive us and send us a comment and we will all continue learning.
Okay, today's episode is special in a number of ways. One of them is that this will be our first listener suggestion episode. It comes to you thanks to a great fan, Sarah Shumbera.
Yeah! Actually, side note, Sarah sent us an email earlier today and I responded. And it was really nice.
Nice.
Because we love Sarah. Cute. And Sarah's awesome. And we love hearing from our community. So we're telling y'all, we want to hear from you.
Yes. Reach out. Leave comments. Tell us your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah's work and passion focuses mainly on healthcare architecture. Because of this, she asked if we could do an episode on Florence. Thank you very much for your suggestion, Sarah. I really enjoyed researching Florence and was super impressed by all that she achieved and all the information there is out there.
Yeah, at first, I guess we only thought of Florence Nightingale as a nurse. We were just a little skeptical about discussing someone so outside of the profession of construction. But then Rajiti argued that there are a few connections that can be made.
Yes, it's really fascinating how much she contributed to healthcare architecture. Some sources name her the architect of modern hospitals, but I'll let you be the judge. Today, I'm only going to be able to scratch the surface, but I really hope it inspires all of you out there to search for more information because there is a ton to know about her.
Is that Wi-Fi? Because I'm feeling a connection.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
So, listeners, be sure to keep sending us suggestions, and you might hear an episode based on your nomination.
Exactly. Obviously, it depends on the focus for the season and how much information we can find about the suggested ladies, but we'd love to hear suggestions.
Yes. All right, let's start. The time was May 12, 1820. The place, Florence, Italy.
Oh, she's from Florence. I love Florence.
Perfetto. Oggi parliamo di una persona italiana.
Va bene. Andiamo.
Well, she was just born in Florence. Her parents happened to be there, but they were British. And they moved her back to England a year later, so I wouldn't call her Italian.
What a tease!
I know, right?
Oh, I got really excited.
I know.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, her parents had a thing for naming their children per the city they were born in. Thus, Florence and her sister, Parthenope.
Oh, that's a name, though. Can we talk
that's
about
a name.
It? Like.
Yeah, Parthenope.
Parthenope.
Like, what would it be the nickname?
Nope.
Party?
Ooh, party.
Nope.
No, but like, for real, what's your name?
Oh, I
nope.
Like that.
Nope.
No, but for real, what's your name?
I kept saying it. You were like, what is her nickname? Nope. Nope. But everyone just thought I was saying no.
We didn't catch it.
You just thought you were being sassy.
I know, but I was being sassy and giving a suggestion.
Okay, enough of that. Back to
amazing.
Yes.
Her family was well connected. Her dad, William Edward Nightingale, was actually born William Edward Shore, but his mom's brother left him the Nightingale estate, and he took on the Nightingale last name.
Oh, that reminds me of Eileen Gray, episode 15.
Yeah, I thought of her too. So, Florence's mom, Frances, was the daughter of politician, abolitionist, and Unitarian William Smith. Florence had family in high places on both sides.
That's cool. I wonder if Frances was born in France. But anyway, that's pretty impressive to hear about Florence's family. And I'd like to take a moment to talk about how privileged she was to have parents of that caliber. To provide these connections and offer those opportunities. And I like that her grandpa was an abolitionist. It's refreshing considering the time period.
Mm.
Good point. Florence was also lucky because her dad believed in educating women. He taught both his daughters history, math, Italian, literature, philosophy, and Florence absolutely loved it. She loved collecting and analyzing data, which is something she put to good use later in life.
That's so great. I think we were mentioning it in season one that something a lot of our ladies have in common is someone who supported them and told them that they could do these things, even if it wasn't typical for society at that time.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. And to have that kind of education, we will see that this was probably super helpful for Florence, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In February 1837, Florence felt a call from God, telling her to devote her life to the service of others, which Florence translated to being a nurse. her family said, nah, girl.
Wait, didn't we just get done talking about how great her family was for supporting her?
Well, the support mostly came from her dad. Her mom and sister were more traditional. They didn't mind women being educated, but they didn't think it needed to go further than that.
I see.
But, like, what were they saying nah to? To God talking to her or to her being a nurse?
Definitely to her being a nurse, but maybe to both.
Okay.
All right, I'm taking back my praise of her parents. I will only praise her dad.
I mean, okay. Yeah. I'm also assuming that in this time period, girls from high society in the 1800s were just expected to marry and pop out more high society babies. Society women didn't have jobs outside the home, and it would just get in the way of them procreating and throwing parties. They wouldn't be helping the needy and the poor.
Actually, rumor has it that Florence was pretty, so finding a husband in those days would have been no problem for her. In fact, she had a 9-year romance with politician and poet Richard Monckton Milnes. But Florence, the heartbreaker, in the end said, no, thank you, because she felt marriage would get in the way of her calling from God. You know how it is.
You know, I would have thought that maybe she was just very career driven. But I mean, it seemed like it was more than that with, you know, it being a calling from God and all.
Yeah, it seems like a path you don't ignore, you know? Yeah.
I wish we had like a sound effect like, oh, every time we say like, a call from God.
Or like a harp thing, like a thing.
Oh, well, in 1847, Florence was hanging out in Rome, minding her own business, and she met Sidney Herbert, a politician that was on his honeymoon. And somehow they became BFFs. He was Secretary of War during the Crimean War. Remember that because it will become important later.
Noted.
Locking it away.
3 years later, she went to Germany for nurse training. During that time, her dad, who we know is in the business of supporting her education, gave her £500 a month, which roughly translates to $65,000 today, so that she could live comfortably and focus on doing her thing.
Dang. That's a salary.
Yeah.
That's a salary. A yearly every salary. Month.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It must be nice.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot. Well, Florence's time to shine came during the Crimean War. Britain joined the war against Russia on the side of the Ottoman Empire. And in 1854, Florence's buddy, Sidney, authorized her to be sent as a volunteer nurse to modern-day Istanbul.
Wow. Between Italy and Istanbul, we have been all up and through her stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
now,
true.
What Florence found when she got there was total chaos. I mean, it was war, but still, the patients were low on medicine and food. Hygiene didn't exist. Everyone getting infections left and right. She called it Kingdom of Hell.
Whoa. Let's just say Ooh. It was cray.
Yeah.
Florence was like, I need to do something about this. And she started observing, gathering data. Today, people recognize that she was a pioneer in graphical representation of statistics. She actually developed her own pie chart, the Nightingale Rose Diagram.
Whoa, that's cool. She sounds organized, and I appreciate the attention to detail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very architect of her.
Mm-hmm.
She was real smart. She wanted to have empirical evidence of things. The death rates, how long were people sick, how things were laid out, what procedures were in place. And with that information, she started making changes. She introduced sanitation concepts like dressing wounds, cleaning patients and their clothes. Something that seems so obvious today was so novel then.
Such a basic concept and so effective. Here's your reminder, listeners, to wash your hands. There's still a panorama going on.
She was hardcore dedicated. When all the medics would leave for the night, Florence would walk around with a little lamp, checking up on the sick, and they started calling her the Lady with the Lamp. That's also the name of a 1951 movie about her life and achievements.
Well, I guess that's different from a Lady and a Tramp.
Yes.
Yeah, there wasn't much nursing in that one, if I remember correctly. Or spaghetti. Okay.
We're on fire today, these jokes.
Yeah.
Eventually, Florence sent a letter to the Times newspaper asking for the government to get their act together and send the resources needed for their wounded soldiers.
Taking matters into her own hands. I love it.
Why does this sound so familiar?
Because it's different times, same BS.
Sounds like it.
Britain's response was to build a prefabricated hospital and send it to the Dardanelles. They called it Rinocchioi Hospital. There, Florence put into practice good habits like improved ventilation, making people wash their hands, and the death rate fell to 1/10 of what it was before. Can you imagine something as simple as washing your hands, saving lives?
This is eerily relevant.
Remember, listeners, to soap for 20 seconds and run water for 10 seconds afterwards. You can sing the happy birthday song to help.
Thank you, Jessica. So this convinced Florence of something she suspected. Poor living conditions were killing patients. And after the war, she really got to work. She did so many things we won't have a chance to fully discuss. For example, she helped modernize the profession of nursing and advised the government on army and public health care reform. She really left her mark.
This is all great, but I have to wonder if it was because of her status and the people that she knew, like these politicians, that allowed her to make so many changes and influence.
Yeah, I'm sure that didn't hurt. You're right. Well, most importantly for us on this episode today, Florence focused her attention to sanitary hospital designs.
Yeah, bring on the architecture.
Yes, architecture.
Yeah, what this show is about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Florence was no fan of architects. I quote, "In a building or extending a hospital, it is to be taken for granted that the object in view is to benefit and not injure the sick."
Oh, snap. Florence throwing some shade.
I mean, it sounds like straight facts to me.
I guess better. Here's another lovely quote. "I know no class of murderers who have killed so many people as hospital architects. At this moment, there are many diseases less fatal in the most wretched homes than in hospitals, i.e. hospitals secure a higher mortality."
Dang.
Tell us how you really feel, Florence.
For real.
She complained that doctors were complicit in these murders because they didn't pay enough attention to the hospital building designs. So there you go. Everyone's getting blamed.
Okay, so she's spreading the blame around. I got
everybody's at fault. Yeah. The designers, the doctors, the patients that don't wash their hands.
Especially those.
Yep.
She actually had a lot of respect for designers she considered good, like Douglas Galton. He did the plans for the Herbert Hospital. She called it the best military hospital in the world.
So not everyone was in danger from a tongue lashing, I guess. Yeah.
It seems that there's at least one hospital that's saving lives and, you know, not murdering patients.
One would hope.
Yeah. Actually, let's talk about Herbert Hospital. Our buddy, Sidney Herbert, wink, wink, authorized it to get built and gave it his name.
Okay, sure. As one does.
Exactly. It was one of the first hospitals built in the 1800s. To be a hospital. During that time, England had been converting existing buildings into hospitals, which does not sound ideal.
Hospital TI? That sounds bad.
Real bad.
excuse me. Sorry. I've been out of the game for a minute. TI?
So TI stands for tenant improvement, and it's a type of project where you're renovating a space within the existing shell or exterior building. So for example, in an office building, you could renovate one office space completely or one doctor's office, but it wouldn't change the exterior of the building or the surrounding office spaces and tenants.
Okay.
So hospital TI equals bad news bears. In 1865, Herbert Hospital was open. The design was influenced by Florence's ideas and became a model for hospital designs for the next century.
Okay. Wow. So maybe Florence was a little biased when she called it the greatest.
Just a little. Florence was writing articles and books about her findings and thoughts on hospital design, offering solutions based on her research. Today we call this evidence-based design, and it's something healthcare designers continue to do.
Wow, that's really cool how much she influenced healthcare design.
Eventually, her reputation grew, and architects were coming to her, asking her to review their plans. Florence advocated for efficient hospital designs that would avoid wasted space and without holes where people could get harassed.
Keeping it efficient and safe.
Speaking of safety, she also argued that children's wards should be in areas that were frequented often, not isolated on the top floor, so everyone could keep an eye on the kids.
Well, yeah, if there are such things as harassment going on, I would want them to be safe too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. Florence thought hospitals should have a lot of sunlight and outside spaces for exercise. She called it a pavilion model, where sunlight filled most spaces. She proposed full height windows at specific intervals with beds between them to get good ventilation without creating drafts.
I mean, natural light can help anyone's mood. These concepts seem like they could have been really innovative for the time, too.
She wrote a book called Notes on Nursing about the importance of the environment, ventilation, and sunlight for healing and good health in general.
I mean, environment, ventilation, and sunlight? These are all just basic design principles today.
Yeah, for sure. There are things that we think of as basic now, but they weren't back then.
She also talked about the importance of gardens and hospital design. They provided fresh air, gave patients a place to exercise, and could be used as apothecaries. They were actually really useful.
Yeah. You can grow your own herbs for natural remedies. I like it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds lovely.
A lot of these ideas are still true today. We know how important sunlight and visual stimulation is. Hospitals today have welcoming atriums and green spaces. Patients, people in general, but especially patients, need variety. Florence touched on that in Notes on Nursing. She said, ideally, patients would be able to see flowers and green spaces from their windows.
It's also something so positive and reassuring, you know, to see something beautiful grow.
Mm-hmm. Yes. With all the concepts we've discussed, ventilation, sunlight, she developed ideal dimensions for rectangular wards, 30 feet by 120 feet for 32 patients, with ceiling heights between 16 to 17 feet. It was later called the Nightingale Ward, and it became the model of pavilion-style design.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, so cool. I like how she designed this, you know? She thought about all those details.
Mm-hmm.
She also thought hospitals shouldn't be more than two floors and no more than 100 patients under one roof. Less was better for her. She understood hospitals needed space for supplies, but she wanted it to be efficient. The more space, the more air. Which actually makes me think about Memorial City in Houston, which is a huge hospital complex with all these different towers and buildings. It even has a mall. It's crazy. Yeah.
What? A mall?
Okay, that's I'll crazy. Take you when you crazy. Come again. But I think Florence, if she saw that today, she would faint.
Yeah, she probably would. But also, like, the population was definitely a lot less back then.
Yeah, for sure. And I gotta believe that, like, with today's technology being so different, we can probably have those type of spaces, but also keep in mind Florence's design principles.
Yes. Right. She also often asked for nurses to have access to suitable break rooms and with a kitchenette and individual private bedrooms that had windows and were open to the outside.
I think people would want something like this for their basic work environment. Well, back when we were working offices.
But even work from home, it applies to that too.
Yeah. Florence consulted on a bunch of hospital designs. Check out our show notes for a link to that list. Two projects worth mentioning. Number one, St. Thomas Hospital, with a pavilion style of seven buildings connected by walkways. And two, the famous Johns Hopkins University Hospital. In 1876, the Civil War doctor, John Shaw Billings, who was hired to be an architect, asked Florence for advice. The building had to be a solace for the sick and an ornament to the city.
Ooh, that sounds like a really interesting design problem to have.
Yeah.
John sent Florence five rough plans, and Florence sent back 12 pages of comments, which John took into account. Yeah. When it opened in 1889, the toilets were really separated from the wards and separately ventilated. The building for pathology was separate from the building for the sick but alive people. Each patient had a separate room with its own ventilation and vestibule between the room and the central corridor. He tried really hard to avoid cross-contamination with the technology they had at the time, which was not much, and he tried really hard to put into use everything that Florence told him to do in those 12 pages.
Wow. You know, it almost sounds like basic design of hospitals today. And the fact that he took all of her comments into consideration, that's something.
Yeah, for sure. She was clearly respected with regard to hospital design. And the fact that these things are now basic design standards shows that also.
Mm-hmm.
We have to realize this lady was totally revolutionizing the game with all her sunlight, cross-ventilation, patient care ideas. She might not have been the very first one to think of those, but she was one of the first that made it happen on a large scale. She was a pioneer in her field, and she achieved reform. What amazes me the most is that her ideas became the norm in her lifetime.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was able to change so much, which in turn, it helped so many people.
Clearly.
Today, hospitals have changed a lot. We very briefly touched on that before, but her basic principles of the importance of sunlight, cross-ventilation, separation of program, and the idea of basing design on research and data, the way she did, remains true today. So, ladies, how do you feel about Florence now? Did I convince you about her contributions to the building industry?
Yeah, this lady literally changed hospital design. She sounds amazing.
Agreed. She made huge contributions, and I'm really glad that we talked about her.
Yeah.
I just realized I didn't say when she died.
Oh.
I mean, it's 18-something. We know that she died. Yeah, I hope she didn't die because of poor hospital conditions, though. Or like an infection.
Whoa, a twist.
Like that she didn't get murdered in one of those hospitals that she was critiquing, you know?
Why would she have been murdered?
By one of a disgruntled hospital architect that got a negative review.
Oh, right, because the hospital architects are murderers.
Yes.
Well, Florence died peacefully in her sleep.
Yes, I like that better.
In London, on August 13, 1910, she was 90 years old.
Good life.
Hopefully it was in a well cross ventilated room with
lots of
natural
sunlight.
Views, lots of sunlight,
right? And green spaces.
A lot of greenery right outside her window.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sure it was. Okay, well, now it's time for our Caryatid. Lizzie, please remind us what this is.
Sure thing. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. Each episode, we will present a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode.
All right. Drum roll, please. Ellen Taylor! Ellen Taylor is the Vice President of Research of the Center of Health Design. She is an architect leading the charge in healthcare design. In 2017, she won the HCD10 Researcher Award. It recognizes significant contributions to the industry of healthcare design.
Wow.
She has a bachelor's degree in architecture from Cornell University, global executive MBA degrees from Columbia University and London Business School, and a PhD in design, patient safety, and human factors from Loughborough University in England.
Degrees on degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen is a world-regarded writer and speaker. She has worked on Pebble Partner projects, leading grant-funded research programs supported by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality and the California Healthcare Foundation, among others.
She is way beyond an architect. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool that she's worked on such a range of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. She is the Vice President of FGI's Healthcare Guidelines Revisions Committee, HGRC, and serves on the HGRC Executive Committee of the Steering Committee.
Dang, committees on committees on committees.
I know. Like, it was hard for me to keep track.
Yeah.
And I'm not done yet.
Oh.
Okay.
Ellen serves on the Editorial Advisory Board of the Health Environment Research and Design Journal and the American Journal of Infection Control. Ellen is currently a board member of the AIA Academy of Architecture for Health Knowledge Community. Some people call Ellen a rock star. I call her an inspiration.
Florence revolutionized healthcare design. And Ellen, although she isn't revolutionizing the same way, she is improving it and to making it more efficient and in turn making it better for the patients.
Right.
Exactly. It sounds like Ellen is following in Florence's footsteps, trying to make a difference and to keep bettering healthcare design.
This was an awesome caryatid.
Agreed.
Oh, I'm glad you think so. Before we sign off, we want to say grazie, CMYK, for the music, John W., our technical producer, and grazie mille a tutti for listening. We hope you enjoyed learning about Florence and Ellen, along with our banter, and you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies. Again, grazie.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your amici, your neighbors, your coworkers, your doctors and healthcare professionals, your nurses, and give us 5 stars on iTunes. Write us a review, and this will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these awesome ladies with us.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about women bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at She Builds Podcast and on Twitter at She Builds Pod. Ciao.
Ci sentiamo.
Arrivederci.
So, ladies, what would your names be if your parents had done that?
Well, my name would be Miami. What?
I like that.
My name would be Melbourne.
Oh, I like that one.
It sounds like a hipster, a hipster name.
Yeah. What would the nickname be, Lizzie?
That would be Melby, obviously. Yeah,
like the Spice Girl.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. Well, Mine would be Bayamon.
Actually, these all feel like names for rappers. And Nurjiri, that would be your shtick. Like, yo soy Bayamon, y soy de Bayamon. Whoa, whoa, reggaetonera de Bayamon. I don't know.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.